Thursday the 20th of September, Rabbi Ben Tzion White, Hilchos Arbaminim, Part 2. Shizmer Rabbeisai, I'd just like to start off with a disclaimer that I'd like to speak now on the Halakhos of Lulav. However, in the space of half an hour, I imagine it's not going to be possible to go through all the Halakhos, so nobody should infer from the fact that I've not mentioned something that it's not a problem and may well be possible, even though it hasn't been mentioned in the Shia. The Pusuk says, ולקחתם לכם ביום הראשון פרי עץ הודו וחפש תמולם ענף עץ עובד ועבי נוחל. There is an interesting יסוידסטיק מחלוקס הפוסקים how to understand פושט פשט, ממש פושט פשט, the translation in fact of the words kapos tamurim, and this has a very relevant bearing halacha lemaisa. About 100 years ago in Eretz Yisrael, the amount of palms started to dwindle, and at the time they began to bring in from abroad palm trees that are known as the canary palm. The canary palm, as its name implies, originates from the Canary Islands. As you all know, a group of islands situated off the northwest coast of Africa. Apparently in the early days people used to cut down the lulavim that grew in these palm trees, and it was accepted that you could be mekayim the mitzvah with them just as one could with the ordinary palms. About 50 years ago a debate started as to whether the canary palm is indeed the same species as the palm tree. Nowadays we have that it has come down to our machlokes haposkin. The Moshe Feinstein, Zechon Levucha, in Igris Moshe says that it's not, and Shlomo Zalman Auerbach and Revucha holds that it is. Now, first of all, just to briefly understand the difference between the two trees, they are in fact visually different, and the next time that you are in a hot country you will be able to spot this. The palm tree that we're used to is a tall tree, grows about 100 foot tall, and it's got a narrow trunk. The leaves are quite rigid and stiff, and at least at the top they all point upwards. The canary palm is not like that at all. It's much shorter and squatter. It's more decorative. That's why it's used in Eretz Yisrael, particularly to line the avenues that go into the new towns. And it only grows about 50 or 60 foot tall, and it's got a much wider trunk. The leaves are also much greener. Now, the leaves are more flexible, and that's why when you stand back and look at the tree, you'll see that the leaves droop downwards rather bow-like, because they're so flexible they don't stand up, but they droop downwards rather like a keshis, like a bow. Now the main difference that worries the poskim between the two trees is that the ordinary palm, as we all know, produces dates. The canary palm does not produce dates, it produces an inedible berry. And Moshe Feinstein, in that famous Shubin Cholik Eirchaim Chelik Dalet, says quite plainly that just as we are all used to the fact that although the lemon is from the citrus family, nobody would consider being yotzer the mitzvah baba meaning with a lemon because it's an entirely different species, so too is the canary palm a different species. The Torah stipulates kapos tamurim, the branches of the tamurim, and the tamurim is a tree, Ramosha learns, that bears tamurim. This tree does not give out tamurim, it is not from the same family, and you can't be yotzer the mitzvah. And he says you can't be yotzer the mitzvah even b'dieved, and somebody who makes a bruch on is the bruch lebatullah. And at the end of the tshuva he warns the sochrim that those who knowingly sell this lulav to people who want to become the mitzvah are over on the lav listen over the sit and miksha. The Shlomo Zalman Auerbach takes an entirely different view. He holds that it is kosher the mitzvah, and the fact that it doesn't produce dates does not concern him, because he learns pshat a kapos tamurim. Tamurim has nothing to do with dates. Tamurim is the name of the tree. The tree is the tumor, tzadik katumor yifroch. And in fact, he argues that in the Torah Loshon, the produce, the fruit of the tumor, is called devash and not tamurim at all. So he holds it is the same, and that you are mekayim the mitzvah. However, as we know, if you have a machlekes haposkim, and you've got poskim who say that you're not mekayim the mitzvah, you would of course want to avoid using something where some say you're making a bruchah l'batullah and you're not yotzer the mitzvah. The experts give a number of simonim to be able to tell the difference. It does sometimes find its way here. It all depends on what the supply of the lulavim is like in Eretz Yisrael. When you get a situation like last year, where one of the main wholesalers of lulavim, who is not a religious person, tried to corner the market, and he controlled how many lulavim were allowed in Eretz Yisrael, they start to infiltrate the market, particularly in the Yerushalayim area, because they grow very abundantly in the Yerushalayim area. The tree does, the canary palm does very well in the central areas and the coastal plains. It doesn't do so well at all in very hot locations, hot and dry locations. That's why if you can be sure that your lulav comes from Mitzrayim or comes El Arish or Yericho, it's very unlikely that it's the canary lulav. However, one of the differences is that besides being much greener, which isn't always a simon, because you can sometimes get the ordinary lulav also to be green, one of the most important simonim is that because it's flexible, if you were to hold it at one end by the shedra and allow the shedra to hang downwards, because it's so flexible, it's going to open up fan-like. And the ordinary lulav, although it also opens up, it doesn't open up anywhere near the same degree of openness as the canary one does. Another obvious simon is that if you hold the lulav at arm's length away from you, the ordinary lulav that we're used to is rather like a nail. It's wide at the bottom and then tapers off slowly as it gets to the top. However, the canary lulav is not like that at all. It retains its circumference almost all the way to the top, and it gets to a sudden tip at the end. Another simon is that if you were to part the leaf carefully of the ordinary lulav and run your fingers down the edges, you'll more than likely find that you've got a white powder-like residue that's left on your fingers. The canary palm does not have that white residue at all. If you've got any doubt, then by all means you need to ask a Seicha Nerman if he's aware of the origin of these lulavim and if it's reliable that it's not a canary lulav. The lulav has got a shear. The shear is Dalet Tfuchim. Dalet Tfuchim, according to the Moshe, according to the Chazon Ish, is 39 centimeters, which is roughly 15.35 inches. According to the Midi Yerushalayim and the B'chaim Noah, it's 32 centimeters, which is very roughly 12.6 inches. Now, what's important to remember is that this shear, let us take for the moment the Chazon Ish shear of 39 centimeters, does not mean from top to bottom of the lulav or from bottom to the top. It doesn't mean that at all. It's a shear that must be there on the shedra itself. On the shedra without the leaves. Now, even on the shedra, it's also not so straightforward, because, as you're probably aware, the lulav starts off, the bottom of the shedra is solid, and then it starts to part either side to the leaves. However, it doesn't always part either side immediately, with a leaf on the right and then a leaf immediately opposite on the left. Sometimes it takes a bit of time till it gets there, and it first parts with a leaf on the right, and there's no leaf on the left, but a little bit further up, staggered, there's then a leaf to the left, and the same happens once or twice again. The Poskim will hold that that area of the lulav that are parting into leaves, where the leaves are not opposite each other, that is still not called shedra, that is called ufsa. So according to those Poskim, you can't make your measurement from that area, you have to start from where the leaves are opposite each other. So you have to take your tape measure, if you're worried about the height of the lulav, and start from where the leaves are opposite each other and measure not to the top of the lulav, but measure to the point where the leaves stop and the central leaf, the tumors, starts to emerge. And according to Chazon Ish, you need to have 39 centimeters along that run. Now, the reason for that, there's several reasons given. One reason is that since the shear of the Adasim and the Rubus, which go of course either side of three tefuchim, you need to have the lulav emerging beyond the end of your Adasim and the Rubus by one tefach. The reason for that is, the Poskim say, in order that the Adasim and the Rubus should not interfere with the Nanua of the lulav as your Mekayim, the mitzvah of Netilas Lulav and Nanuim. Rashi brings a reason that since in real life the lulav is of course the highest of those minim, so therefore the palm tree, so therefore when you're Mekayim the mitzvah, it should also be the tallest. and stick out above the other two. The Shulchan Aruch Rav holds that it's not sufficient that the leaves protrude a tefach, but he wants the actual shedra itself to protrude a tefach. The Mishnah Brura paskens that you don't need, if it's a problem, you don't need to be machmer for that, and it's sufficient if the leaves go beyond the tefach of the hadassim and harubas of either side. However, if you've got particularly long hadassim and harubas, then the poskim say that the lulav still needs to go a tefach beyond the hadassim and harubas that you've actually got on your lulav. So if you've got long hadassim and harubas and a short lulav, you need to look at that carefully. As we know, the shedra splits into leaves on either side, and it continues usually with one central leaf that emerges from the middle and continues to the top. Now, not necessarily does the teumas need to be the highest leaf. Very often it's not, and it isn't brought down in the poskim that if the teumas is not the highest leaf, that that should be detrimental in any way. However, what is important, and many of the newcomers to this miss this, and that is the Shittas HaRamor, that this, the teumas must be doubled. The leaves of the lulav are normally a double leaf. If you strip off a leaf, you open it and you see that it's open on one side and then it's joined on the other side. That central leaf must be a double leaf, and very often people march out proudly holding their lulav thinking they've got a very closed teumas. It's not a closed teumas at all, it's just one single leaf, and that's why it appears to be closed. The problem is that if you start to examine it to see whether it's a double leaf or not, particularly the first time purchasers who haven't got experience with this, they do an enormous amount of damage by parting the leaves looking to see whether the teumas is double or not. And of course this is bad news not only for the people who want to buy, but also particularly for the socher who's left with a pile of the lulav that may have well been mehuda and are totally useless. So if anybody hasn't got experience, there's nothing wrong with asking somebody to show him how to part the leaves carefully and what to look for. It's interesting to note that the Ramor who says that the leaf must be double, the Nizam Oyo points out that in previous generations, of course, people were makbid for this Ramor. However, they held that it was sufficient if the leaf comes back on itself and turns the corner, as it were, and there's only the narrowest lip coming back on that central leaf, that it wasn't mummish doubled over like you fold a page in half. And they held that that's also called double because it comes back a little way. The problem is that they are poskim who doubt this very much, particularly Bizmanenu Hagon Rabbi Yashu Shlita holds that that leaf, the teumas, the central leaf, when it comes back and covers up the other half, it must cover up the other half beruboy. Rov of the leaf, the majority of the leaf must be covered. Then we say ruboy kekuloy. If it's less than ruboy, it is pusul. And the Mehoror nowadays, who paskim d'aluminium, have accepted this as standard, and they will not be maksha a lulav where the central leaf, the teumas, isn't covered at least by rov. Sorry? No, I'm saying that Shlomo Zalman said that in previous generations people held that the lip is enough, but nowadays it's been accepted that a lip is not enough, and if it's only a lip, and or even more than a lip, if it's not the majority, then the lulav is considered to be pusul, and you don't make a brocha on the lulav. If I could just mention for a moment the dinim of nechlak and nistak. Nechlak means that the leaf, which is a double leaf, must not be split. There are more paskins, or he says it's a mitzvah min hamufcha, that the leaf should be completely closed. Now, I'm warning you, this is very difficult to find. It is very difficult to find. Bifrat and Chitzboret, where the lulavim have been transported here, to find a lulav, you can find it, but it's not easy to find a lulav where the teumas is completely closed. I just want to mention one more point. We were talking about the double leaf, that it must be doubled over the rochbar. That means the leaf must look something like that. That at least the leaf comes back on itself and covers over the first half. So you should see slightly less than the first half of visible. Now that is as far as the roichav is concerned. What about the length of the leaf? How long must it cover that area? You very often find lulav where the tip you see on one side, and when you look at the other side, you see that the other tip, which of course is the other half of the leaf, is slightly lower. Now that being slightly lower means that it has not managed to cover itself completely in length. He covered itself all the way up, and then when he got to the very top, he just couldn't manage it, and he stopped a little bit short of covering himself right to the tip. There are poskim who are concerned about that, because there's a Gemara that says that Haile Luvah the Nufik Bechad, the Salik Bechad Hutzah, Bal Mumhu Pulsal, a Luvah that finished off with a single leaf is Pulsal. And there's many, many interpretations of what the Gemara means with a single leaf. And they're concerned that perhaps if it isn't covered all the way to the top as well, never mind the width, but even in the length, it may be Nichlal and what the Gemara is talking about. Shlim Zalman doubts very much that it's a Pulsal of Bal Mum. He's slightly concerned that it may be chusa, but the maisa, he is machshe elulav if the majority of the length of the middle leaf is doubled over berochboy and beorkoy. And this is backed up by the shittas of the Rav Shulchan Aruch about Tanya, who says quite plainly that if it is doubled over beorkoy, that means you've only got a little bit of the top that's showing, that you see a tip that's exposed on one side, on the other side, it's not, the second tip hasn't quite reached to match up with the other one, that it is kosher, and that is also the shita of the Pkuri Yaakov and the Prima Gordon. Now, getting back to closed. Now, nechlak means that those two tips, as they meet, should be closed. There should be no split between them. And that is quite difficult to find. There are more paskins that it's a mitzvah min hamufcha to take a lulav which is completely closed and not even open a mashahu, because there are poskim who hold that if it's open a mashahu, you should not make a brucha on it. The Zilma Gaon, the Gro, holds that as long as the leaf hasn't parted, ruboy, the majority of the leaf going down to the shedra. The Terezov holds that as long as it hasn't parted, kishir tefach. Now, the Mishnah Brura, Kedalkoi, paskins like the Vilna Gaon that you can make a brucha on the lulav if it hasn't parted ruboy. In fact, he says that if somebody who has got a lulav where the tiyumis is slightly split, he need not take lulav chaveiroi, the matona almanas lahachseh, and make a brucha on his friend's lulav that is completely closed, because if for this chumrah of the remor, it's not necessary to go out of your way and make a brucha on lulav chaveiroi, as long as the leaf has not opened berubay. Berubay meaning in its length down to where it joins the shedra. Now, when we say it's split, and we've got the measurements of ruboy, tefach, whatever the measurement is, we're talking about where the two parts touch each other. If you examine them very carefully, you see that they're split, but they're actually touching one another. There's contact between the two. That is nechlak. However, the Gemara says that there is a psul called nistak kehemnik. It's split like a hemnik. Now, exactly what a hemnik is not entirely clear. Rashi says the hemnik was a old-fashioned iron tool that seemed to be used by the copyists when they were making lines on parchment in order to prepare for writing on. They had some sort of a double-headed tool where one end came to a point and the other end came to a double point, and it seems to be something similar to what the children have in school to use for geometry, some sort of a divider. So a divider, if it's closed, you've got the two points. There are illustrations in the Kitzvi Yad and Lishonim that depict something that looks like a two-pronged fork, a fork with just two teeth. Whatever it is, one thing is clear, that the psul is, if it's not only split, but you actually see a space, air, between the two leaves. That is when the psul of hemnik starts. Now, that could even be theoretically the mashahu. If the two leaves have split and you see a bit of air in between, it could be psul. Now the question is, how far apart is apart? The Shlomo Zalman Auerbach learns that it isn't sufficient if it's merely apart and the two leaves are parallel to each other, but there's a space in between. He says kehemnik is something like a tweezer, where the two leaves are pulling slightly away from each other in opposite directions, like a V, but not quite as exaggerated as a V. If there's the slightest pull to the opposite direction where one leaf is pulling away from the other, that is the pasul of the hemnik. The Masham, the Bajan Arub, says that if you hold the lulav and you can see that it's one leaf, he be'etzim is machshir. And he also says that if you were to shuckle the lulav, and during the shuckling, the two leaves, the parts of the leaf that have pulled away from each other, start to touch, or if you put it down on the table and it touches, that means when you place it, the lulav flat down on the table, you see that the lulav then closes, and there's no space in between. So as long as you haven't got a split, which is whichever shear you're going to take, the split of the tepach or the split of ruba according to the Mishnah Brura, then the lulav would be kosher. I'd like to speak just a few minutes about korah. Korah, you may know, is the brown material, a matter that one finds, sort of a peel that one finds usually at the back of the shedra. And it sort of starts to come away in long strips. I always used to think that korah, I used to hear about it a lot in Yerushalayim, this korah, and I used to think that it was an Arabic word, but I recently found out it's not an Arabic word, it's in fact a Polish word. And in Polish, the bark of a tree is called korah. This korah, one finds it in varying amounts, depending, according to the experts, as to the precise location on the tree where the lulav actually emerged from. If it was more open to the elements, it affects the amount of korah that grows on it. Sometimes you find just a little bit that is trailing down the back of the lulav. Sometimes you find that it's worked its way in between the leaves. And sometimes you can find the lulav, which I'm sure you've seen, where there's a massive amount of korah that's covering the whole top of the lulav. Now, if you were to sit for a few minutes in the Beis Haruah, I can guarantee you that in a very short space of time, you find somebody coming in with a lulav that's totally encased in korah and sticking it under the nose of whoever's sitting there and saying, "What do you think about that then?" And the truth is that I find it amazing that this person actually bothered to come, because it's from the few showers on Hilchos Daled Minim that you can ask over the phone. Because the person sitting there looking at a lulav covered in korah can of course have no idea as to what is happening underneath. It might as well be lying in a suitcase. You can't know at all whether it's kosher or kosher. Now, there's no doubt that there are those who've got a minig medoyer doyer, that they take a lulav that is totally covered in korah and you can't see what's going on underneath. Now, there are three considerations about such a lulav. One is, does one need to fear that underneath it may be split, either a nechlak, ruboy, tefach, whatever you have, or kehemnik? Do you have to be worried about that? The second thing is that if the lulav is so rigid because it's covered in korah and it's like just a stick, can you be mekayim the mitzvah of nanuim, which is an integral part of the mitzvah of netilas lulav? And the third thing is that if you're right and you're justified in your fear that something is very wrong underneath and it has split, and that split is enough to make it pusul, is the korah that's worked its way in between and now joining that split together, does that now negate the split and emachshir the split and the korah makes it back into one? Now, what I'm going to say now is not everybody's opinion. There is a Rebbe in Yerushalayim called Rebbe Michel Stern. He's a Baal Mechaber of Kashas Arba Minim. He's a Mer Tzedek in the area of Ezra's Torah, and he's a known expert on Arba Minim, and I sat for him many times, and his opinion is as follows. Well, what are you worried about? If you're worried that it is split ruboy, or split tefach. That is very unlikely, and he doesn't think you need to be choshish for that. However, it is possible, very possible, that it is split b'mashehu. That is very possible, because that one sees a lot of. Now, if it is split b'mashehu, and you're going to be choshish that you want a lulav that is not split b'mashehu, and you'd like the korah to work in your favor, that you should think that if it is split b'mashehu, the korah that's in between is going to be mechaberet, the Ma'amar Modcha says that that is not so. Korah is not a chibur. You need to have a double leaf from its creation, and this leaf is not 100, it might be 98% double, but it's not 100% double, because there is a slight split in it, and the korah is not mechaber that. So if you're concerned about that, then you have to think again about taking korah. However, one must bear in mind that Mishnah Berurah says that for that consideration, he's talking about, of course, where you see that it's split and mashu, you don't need to make a brucha a lulav chaveira, you can make a brucha on this lulav.
Why is korah not another leaf?
Sorry?
Why is korah?
No, it actually grows together. It's part of the growth, but it's not part of the leaf. So it's part of the lulav. Yes, it grows naturally on the lulav, but it's not part of the leaf. It's not a chibur on the leaf. I'll get to that in a moment. So if it's kehemnik or now. That's if it's neflak. If it's nesta kehemnik, meaning that it's pulled away like the tweezer, if you accept Rishlem Zama's psak, that merely if the leaves open up, even a mashu, but if they have to pull away from each other, going in slightly opposite directions, again, it's unlikely that that has happened. If it has happened, then the korah is not going to help. But it's unlikely that that has happened, and he holds you don't need to be choshish for that. So the only thing you need to be choshish about is about the mashu, which of course the Mishnah Berurah says you don't have to take another lulav for that at all. So those who have got the minig to take such a lulav in the first instance, definitely yesh lehem al mi lismoich, there's no question of that. Now, the other question is the nanuim. Can you do the nanuim if the lulav is completely covered in korah? The Steichamet brings that it's the machlokes Hapotkin. In fact, it's a machlokes the Geonim and the Ritvor, how to be Mekayim the mitzvah of Nanuim. The Geonim hold that you do this b'holucha v'havor. That means you stretch your arms out in the direction that you're going in, and you hold the lulav at arm's length, and then you bring the lulav back to the body. Al pi kabbalah, you're supposed to bring the lulav and the avaminim back to the heart. But akaponim, so it's a motion of pushing it outwards and then backwards. Now that you can do even if the lulav is solid. And the Steichemet says that that is the minig of most Sephardi communities. That is how they do in the various directions and in the order how they do it. But that is the motion of how they shuckle the lulav by Nananuim. The Ritvor holds that Halucha and Havor is not sufficient. There has to be Kiskus Ha'alim. That means there has to be a slight rattling of the leaves, which is sort of the knocking sound that you hear during the Nanuim, of the leaves knocking against each other, in addition to the Halucha Havor. Now, the Halucha Havor, of course, you can do. The Kiskus Ha'alim, you cannot do if it's all covered and it's very rigid from the collar. Now, the problem is, and the Steichemet adds, that is the minhag Ashkenazim. That is how the Ashkenazim accepted to do Nanuim. So, if you start to remove the korah from the top leaves, there are a number of dangers. One of the main dangers is that you are going to make the lulav pusul l'chol apuchos according to some shittas. Particularly, there's a shittas ha-ga'onim that holds. I didn't manage to get around to that, but if there is a double tiyumis, which does happen, where if you follow the leaves through, you'll see that they end up in a pair going up. There isn't one in the middle. Again, it's just one pair that goes up. The Geonim hold that those tiyumis, those two, must be joined to each other. Now, if there's korah in between, they're still joined to each other. However, if you start to open it up, you're going to ruin that. The Terezorb holds that the Tiyumis needs to be joined to the two on either side, even though we're not makbid on that, but if you've got it, why ruin it? So So Reb Mechelstein suggests that in order to do the Nanuim, if your minig is to take such a lulav, you should merely open up and remove the korah from the lower leaves on either side, so you will still get this kiskasu alim without ruining the top of the lulav.